I should probably start.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as I can.
I'll look on with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does it do it in English? Does that? Well, here's an all English and all Hebrew. If you want to double duty, maybe a little bit of a stretch. But this is all English and this is all Hebrew. So. Okay. I have a few sheets, but I'll distribute them in a little bit. First, let's do chapter 4.
Okay.
I have to say, chapter 4 is not too scintillating. It's we'll read through it and see what we have, but I think there's a few surprises here, which I hinted at in my letter, and I'll just point out what brings me to that conclusion. Hi, how are you?
Hi,
good. Baruch Hashem. Chapter 4 begins as such. Vayhi Melech Shlomo al Kol Yisrael, which is a good start. Shlomo is king of all of Israel. Ve'ela Sarim Asher Lo. So these are the officers. And essentially what we have all through chapter 4 is a long list of officers. So let's just go through them quickly and see what we have here. Ela Sarim Asher Lo, Azariyahu ben Sadoka Kohen. He has a guy named Azariyahu who's the son of Sadok, the Kohen. Doesn't say what his job is. It just says Azariyahu ben Sadoka Kohen. So the assumption is that he's the Kohen Gadol. But it's not entirely clear what his job is.
Well, why do we say he's a Kohen Gadol? It doesn't say Kohen Gadol.
That's correct. It just says Azariyahu ben Tzadok. All we know is that he's an officer. Yeah, that's true. We do find out that Tzadok's Kohen Gadol, so we could assume that Azariyahu is getting the next nod, but there's no specific job title here. Eli Choref v'achiyah b'nei shisha sofrim. So we have a guy by the name of Eli Choref and also maybe Achiyah, who are the children of a guy named Shisha, who we have never heard of before, who are Sofrim. Now Sofrim are scribes. It's hard to say exactly what these job titles equate to. There is a book on the matter which goes into it, but I don't know if anybody really has a solid idea of what it is. However, there is something called the Tikkun Sofrim, the work of the scribes, and the Sofrim were not only scribes, they were also teachers of Torah. They were it's hard to say. Maybe the ones they drew up his lists, or perhaps they work on religious issues. Hard to say exactly what's going on. Achiyah, we will meet later. Actually, good evening, Achiyah Hashiloni is a prophet. Are these the same Achiyah? It's hard to say. Achiyah is such a common name. My father, you know, God is my God is my brotherhood, so to speak. So it's hard to say. Yehoshaphat ben Achilud HaMazkir. Again, what Mazkir is exactly, it's hard to say. Mazkir by itself means one who reminds something of something. So it sounds like his... So that's probably what it is. I would have thought at first class... His recorder, that's correct. Then the question is, what is the Sofrim? How does it describe Sofrim there? Probably just describes his scribes. But it's not clear why a king needs scribes, a king has a recorder. It could be the scribes were there to carry out the commands of the kings. The king said, I want this to happen. So it could be the scribes are actually the ones who wrote it down and passed out that information, as opposed to a recorder. What was a recorder? A recorder was probably the one who wrote the Divrei Hayamim. Now, when I say Divrei Hayamim, I don't mean the Divrei Hayamim that we have in our Tanakh. I mean the chronicles of the king. Every king had his chronicles. In fact, we'll see, later on it will say, if you want to look up the rest of the thing about this king, Halohim Ktuvim B'Divrei Hayamim Asher L'Shevet Yehudah. And all of the kings of all times always had a chronicler that would chronicle their major deeds. Today the king got up and fought a war. Tomorrow the king levied a tax, or whatever
it is. That was the recorder.
That was the Mazkir. Yeah. And that's probably what's going on here. The name, however, is distinctive. I want to point out the name here. The name of this recorder, this chronicler, is Yehoshaphat. That's a very Davidic name. Which, of course, that is not a Davidic name, I apologize, it's a very Yehudaic, that's a very Judaic name.
Well, there was a king
named Yehoshaphat. I don't believe in Tanakh that we'll meet too many Yehoshaphats that are outside of Shevet Yehudah. And I'll show you why that's important at a later time. And, of course, it wouldn't surprise us. It makes sense that the king is from Shevet Yehudah. There's no reason why his chronicler wouldn't also be a Shevet Yehudah. Continuing on, Benayahu Ben Yehoyada al Atzava. So the Benayahu Ben Yehoyada was part of the creating the Pleiti, which was the secret service. According to Chazal, it was the Sanhedrin, but it's hard to say. In any event, he was the one who killed Yoav on the Mizbeach, so he takes over the army. But Sadok and Eviatar Kohanim. And Sadok and Eviatar are both Kohanim, but it's not clear who the Kohen Gadol is. It could be to solve the problem, I don't know, I'm just guessing here, that Tzadok and Eviatar used to be the Kohen Gadol, but we know that Shlomo got rid of him and put up Tzadok, but maybe it was such a contentious issue that he left them both as Kohanim and took Azariahu, the son of Tzadok, and made him the Kohen Gadol to just avoid the whole generational issue. That is, since Tzadok was of the same generation as Eviatar, perhaps Shlomo found it better to take the son of Tzadok, a new generation, and say, you, the new generation, you are now the Kohen Gadol. But it's not really clear why not. It's not really clear.
Always hard feelings.
Well, either way, Eviatar is going to have hard feelings, no doubt about it. But it could be that not having a guy, it was sort of like when you were Eviatar was the CEO, and let's say that Tzadok was the CFO. So to switch positions in the same category, that would have been tough. But I guess to say, well, the next young Turks are coming up, and I'm going to choose Tzadok's son, maybe that was more palatable because it wasn't a guy that used to work for him is now his boss. That's a hard thing. To have a guy who used to work for you is now your boss, I think that's harder than saying we have somebody new who's going to be both of our bosses. But I'm purely speculating here. Let's continue on. And hey, Azayahu ben Natan ala Nitzavim. Now, Azayahu ben Natan is an interesting name. There's no reason to assume that this Natan is the same Natan. But on the other hand, we don't know of any other Natans. The only Natan that we know of.
But this is already the second Azayahu.
Oh, that's correct. So let's
so
take.
Why not another Natan?
Well, what's interesting is both Azayahus in this case may or may not be.
Well, one was son of.
One was son of Tzadok and one was son of Natan. Azayahu may be a Kohanic name. We'll have to see whether that's true later. In which case, by the way, Natan, if this is the same Natan the prophet, Natan the prophet may have been a Kohen. We have no reason to assume that he wasn't. We don't know enough about Natan either way. This may or may not be the same Natan. You could play conservation of names, or you could say, no, it's a brand new Natan. It's not that common name. We simply don't know. However, what is Azayahu ben Natan? His job is on those who represent Alanitzavim. And I'll get back to what that means in a little bit if that's important. V'zavud ben Natan, Kohen Re'eh HaMelech. Now, this is a totally weird job that we've never heard of before. The assumption, by the way, that I would make is that's the same Natan as the previous Pasuk. I would assume that. Which means one of Natan's sons became the ones who was appointed on the Nitzavim, and another one of Natan's sons became the Kohen Re'eh HaMelech. Now, I'm going to translate that literally. Kohen, the priest, Re'eh, the friend of the king. Well, I don't know, what kind of job is that? What's that? What does that say in English?
Private minister of state.
Private minister of state. Okay, it's nice, possible. What does that English say? Any other one?
King's friend.
The king's friend, which ignores, of course, the word Kohen. The word Kohen. So I could tell you, by the way, that there's some basis in this. I'm going to read to you various opinions in the Mefarshim, but I'll go to the oldest one, which is the Targum, the Aramaic Targum. Do you have a different one there? I think you have the same one.
Yeah, I think it's the same.
You can give that whole explanation here at the bottom.
Oh, so go ahead. So read the explanation. I'd love to hear.
Mentioned again in...
Tell Amarna is Egyptian. They're written in their Akkadian tablets, which describe the state of court during the famous sun disk worshiper Pharaoh, okay. Who was called Pharaoh Akhenaten. He was also married to Nefertiti, so everybody gets excited about that.
Okay.
So go ahead.
The author is mentioned in the Tell Amarna tablets as familiar... in the petty courts of Palestine in the 15th century. The exact nature of his duties is uncertain. He was probably a confidential advisor to the king and carried out instructions which were to be kept secret.
Okay. Okay, again, this is... it's all
hey, everyone, this guy is going to do all the secret stuff.
Right. Private minister of state. You know,
what's that?
He's
the king's confidant. That's the way it's...
Director of the CIA.
Right. The only question is, what are we going to do with the word Kohen? So I could tell you, I'm going to read to you the Targum here. This is the Targum Yonatan, or Targum Yerushalmi. I'm not entirely sure which Targum this turns out to be. But which pasuk is this? I lost my place.
Hey.
Chief minister. And Hey says, Azariah ben Natan mimana. Oh, so this is Azariah ben Natan. Vizavud ben Natan Rabba. Shoshvina de Malka. Rabba means the officer. Shoshvina means a buddy, an officer who is a buddy or a friend of the king. Which means that it doesn't lose any words. It takes the word Re'en, translates that as Shoshvina, and it takes the word Kohen and changes that as Rabba. Kohen meaning anointed ones. Now this is possible because in Shmot, we have the Kohanim at Mata at Har Sinai who are showing up and doing work. But the Kohanim haven't really been appointed yet. There are no Kohanim. Aaron doesn't have the job yet.
The
So they're the Bechorim. So there's an idea that the Kohen may mean an appointed officer, a priest, if you will, before it had a specific meaning of those who came out of the Levitic line, specifically of Aaron. That's certainly possible. Another possibility is if Azaryahu is in fact a Kohanic type of name, and there's reason to assume that certain names went around in tribes. You get these names over and over and over again. We've met Azaryahu before. Azaryahu was the son of Sadok, who was the high priest. If Azaryahu is a Kohen, and it's possible, and he's the son of Natan, Azaryahu ben Natan is on the Nitzavim, we'll see who that is. And this guy Zavud is also the son of Natan, that means obviously Azaryahu is a Kohen, that means Natan's a Kohen. If Natan's a Kohen, that means Zavud is a Kohen. It could be that he was the confident friend of the king, but since he was a Kohen also, they carried with him that Kohanic name. So that's certainly a possibility. That could be why they use the word Kohen, even though his duties here don't seem to be priestly duties. It could be that
maybe
he just called him...
Maybe he was minister of religion.
What's that?
Maybe he was minister of religion.
It's possible. It's possible.
It's
simply difficult to say. Difficult to say. Vav, let's go to the next pasuk. Let's continue on with these names. Achishar al-Habayit. Achishar al-Habayit. And what we'll find out later on, al-Habayit is number two man. Al-Habayit is the guy who's appointed over the palace. He is, I think, what in American would be chief of staff. That's correct. Mm-hmm. That is, he's the number two man with tremendous power. We'll meet a guy named, I forget his name. Al-Habayit, and he essentially will see clearly that Al-Habayit is the number two man. Who is this guy, Achishar? Oh, no, never met. And we never will again. Adoniram ben Avdo Alamash. Now, this guy we'll meet over and over again. Adoniram is the tax collector. And here I want to say, he's the IRS. And I want to make something absolutely clear. When they're talking about Al-Hamas, they are not talking about money specifically. They are talking about humans. They're talking about corvée work. And we will see that all of the building goes under Adoniram. And we'll see that he is the Sheriff Nottingham. Was that the guy who collected taxes and got killed in the end of the Robin Hood story? He has tremendous power also. In fact, we'll see that when the kingdom splits later on in Shlomo's son's time, Shlomo's son, Yerachavam, sends Adoniram to reunify the kingdom. Not Benayahu or anybody else, but it's the tax collector. It shows you how much power the tax collector would get. Now, whether the tax collector was this powerful at the time, I don't know, but I can tell you only one interesting thing, that if we go back to David's Sarim, which would be in Shmuel Bet chapter 7, if I'm not mistaken. There's only one guy who has the same job that he did during David's time. Anybody want to guess who that would be? That would be Adoniram Alamas. That's exactly right. So there's a job, it gives you an indication of what's going on. There's a job with so much power that it's a bureaucracy that outlasts the king himself. Mm-hmm. All these other people, as far as we know, are brand new. What?
Two kings.
Oh, almost three, except he got killed.
Yeah.
He tried to reunify and he got stoned to death.
Well, he wasn't popular.
Well, tax collectors very rarely are. Yeah, that's absolutely true. Especially tax collectors with guns, which is what was going on here. I just want to find out, I want to make sure I don't want to give you wrong information. Shmuel Bet, Perichet, I think. Hold on, let me just make sure if I'm right. Yeah, here it is. Just taking a look, if you're curious, to take a look at the job titles that existed during David's time, just as a comparison. So in chapter 8 of Shmuel Bet, we have the following. Pasuk Tetvav says, Vayimloch David al kol Yisrael, Vayhi David osem mishpat utzdaka lekol amo. He's do mishpat and tzedek to all of his nation. The Yoab ben Tzriyal atzava, so he has the general, Yoab ben Tzriyal was killed. Yehoshaphat ben Achilud maskir. Here we have a Yehoshaphat ben Achilud, who is the treasurer. I apologize. Yehoshaphat ben Achilud also keeps his job. Not the treasurer. This is the chronicler. The chronicler, I apologize. The recorder also keeps his job. Yeah, I guess so. You have the same guy in the charge of the history, I suppose, though. Sadik ben Achituv, Achimelech ben Aviatar, Kohanim, Usraya Sofer. So there's a guy named Sraya. Now, we don't know what happens to Sraya. He's simply not in our story here. Uvenayahu ben Yoyadav, Akretiv, Apleti. So there we have a guy who would later become the general. He was in charge of the Kretiv, Apleti. Uvnei David Kohanim Hayu. The children of David were Kohanim. This gives you an impression that the word Kohanim.
Also was there.
Yeah, but not in the same job. He was the head of the Kretiv and Apleti, which apparently is some kind of secret service or or on a god, really. That's probably what it was. Now, we have here, B'nai David Kohanim Hayu, which indicates, again, here's the word Kohanim that's used by king, which clearly does not mean Kohanim, because the children of David were not Kohanim. They were his close advisors. So here, once again, we have the word Kohen used as a close advisor. Now, wait a second. Where's Adoniram Alamas? I'm sure he was here. Where is Adoniram? I apologize. I could have... I was almost sure that Adoniram was here also. Hold on a second. Yeah, no, I know he shows up somewhere else, but I apologize. I don't know where it is. I'll just leave him a question and see if I can find it quickly. Yeah, I'm sorry. If you take a look at Radak, Radak says, Ze Adoram Hanishkar Lemala B'David. This is the same Adoram as opposed to Adoniram, which is mentioned by David. I thought it was mentioned in chapter 8, but it's not. It must be somewhere else, and I don't have a footnote yet.
He said chapter 20.
Oh, chapter 20?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's the Chachma. I apologize. That's the wisdom. Adoniram was not in charge of the mosque in the time of David's first appointing. David's mentioning things. He doesn't even have a tax collector. When does the tax collector show up? After the kingdom divides. David loses his job. He comes back, and a guy named Sheva ben Bichri tries to lead a revolution and break off the northern tribes.
Yeah,
David conquers that, and the first thing that happens after the conquest is that Adoniram gets set up as the tax collector, indicating that Adoniram was essentially David's heavy that was necessary, and he keeps his job. Right, that's the trick with Adoniram. Not that he was the same guy, Davka, that he was appointed at the end of David's life in order to keep the king from a kingdom from splitting apart. Anyway, let's continue on with the names. I said if I can make these names interesting, it'll be a miracle. Pasuk Zion. Now, going back to Azariah ben Natan ala Nitzavim. If we go back to that guy, what are the Nitzavim? The Nitzavim are now going to be described starting from Pasuk Zion. So let's go through the Nitzavim, and we'll see exactly what they are. Which means that that guy, Azariah ben Natan, was the guy who was in charge of all the guys that are now going to be mentioned here. He was high-level management. The rest of these guys are mid-level management. So let's see. Shlomo Shneimasar Nitzavim. Shlomo has 12 representatives. 12, what do you call a person that represents your country from another country?
Yeah.
Ambassadors. That's a good word for a Nitzavim. I'll call Yisrael, b'chilkelu et ha-melech v'et beito. Their job was very simple. Their job was to supply economics, to supply money, food. Chodesh b'shana ye'al ha'echad l'kalkel. You, when you first see the number 12, the first thing you think of, if I have 12 Nitzavim, representatives of Israel, the first thing that pops into your mind is the 12 tribes. The first thing the Pasuk hits you with is, you know why there were 12? Because each one had a responsibility to give 1 month. You could be saying, it's still 12 tribes, but you're going to see shortly that it's not the 12 tribes whatsoever. The Elish Shmotam, Ben Chur Bahar Ephraim, and here the alarm bell should be going off right away, because Chur is a famous name, but it only shows up for a certain tribe. Who is Chur? Remember Chur?
Yeah, he was holding Moshe's hand.
Moshe's hand, absolutely. He was from the tribe of Yehuda. And we only know another Chur that's in Divrei Yamim, and he was also from the tribe of Judah. Now, that I can't prove that therefore, since I have one Chur in Shemot who's from Shevet Yehuda, and one Chur in Divrei Yamim Shevet Yehuda, I can't necessarily prove that that this Chur is also from Shevet Yehuda. But if he is from Shevet Yehuda, look who's running Ephraim's property.
Mm.
That's interesting. Yeah, I can't prove it, but it certainly doesn't. And if this were my only name, I may not have a leg to stand on. But I'll continue on, and I'll show you some other names which are in fishy places when it comes to the land that they're ruling. So there is Har Ephraim, Ephraim's territory, but I would say that it's being represented by somebody from Shevet Yehuda. Let's continue on. Tet Ben Deke. Also, what's very interesting about these is they don't even have names. These are nameless functionaries. They don't even rate names. They're jobs. They're functionaries of Shlomo. Ben Deker b'Makatz b'Shalvim u'Beit Shemesh v'Elon Beit Hanan. Now, part of that territory, Beit Shemesh is in Yehuda, and part of it, Shalvim, is in Shevet Binyamin, as it goes towards the Tel Aviv area. That's part of Binyamin's territory. So here we have a sense that the essentially what we're looking at is gerrymandering. You're looking at the land that there is no territory from Beit Shemesh to Shalvim. It doesn't belong to anybody. It belongs a little bit to Har Ephraim. It's where essentially Ephraim comes down, Yehuda's coming up, that Beit Shemesh is Yehuda, and then in the Shalvim area, if you look in Sefer Yehoshua, you'll see that that's actually part of Shevet Binyamin as it goes to the the city.
Well,
so
you know, if you're going to divide it up so that one territory is responsible for monks,
right,
they have to have approximately equal resources.
Correct.
And the Shvatim, as distributed, did not.
That's absolutely right. Absolutely right. You could say that it was just an economic decision that was being made, although I suspect that there was also a political one as well, although the two very often go together. Let's continue on. Yud. Ben chesed ba'arubot lo socho v'chol eretz chefer. Now there is a guy named Is Socho, and I'm trying to think where he's from. I'm thinking Shevet Menashe was the Is Socho, but I'm not entirely sure. If you have a footnote on it, I'd be happy to hear about it. But I know there was an Is Socho, and I'm trying to think of who it was in Tanakh, and it's not coming to mind. I didn't look it up. Let's continue on. Ben Avinadav Kol Nafat Dor Tafat Bat Dor Tafat Bat Shlomo Hayita Lo Liishan. Now this is very interesting. Wherever this place is, Nafat Dor is, there's a woman named Tafat who is the daughter of Shlomo who is married to this guy. So what does that indicate? Why would this guy marry the why would this guy who's in charge of whatever this territory marry the daughter of Shlomo?
Maybe married
her
and they got the job.
I guess it could be. It certainly could be. And if that's true, what does that mean about when you're giving out the jobs, who you give out the jobs to?
Nepotism.
Keeping the family. Now in this case, if you say that he actually came from Ben Dor Nofe, from Nafat Dor, which is certainly possible, what that means is that he's taking a guy from a foreign land, but in order to make sure that he retains a little loyalty, he did what they used to do in the ancient times. They used to trade to take daughters to indicate that there was a family representative to keep people loyal, bring him into the family. Let's continue on. Ba'ana ben Achilud, Ta'anach Migido. Now Ta'anach Migido are part of Menashe's territory, but you can see that Menashe itself is being divided. The whole Beit Shan area, which is Emek Yisrael, Asher Eitzel Tzartana, which is across from Tzartana, which is in the other side of the Jordan River, Mitachat LeYisrael, is right under the Jezreel area, MiBeit Shan Ad Avel Mecholah, another city there, Ad Me'ever LeYokma'am, which I'm guessing is Yokna'am of today, but I'm not sure. Yud Gimel, Ben Gever Biramot Gilad, this is the guy who has the Golan Heights. By the way, keep in mind, the Golan Heights were also Shevet Menashe, but this is being divided up. Lo chavot Yair ben Menashe asher b'Gilad lo chevel argov asher b'Bashan shishim amrim galo chamat v'riach mechoshet. So I don't know whether this guy was from Shevet Menashe or not, but I can tell you that Shevet Menashe is now divided up into two distinct territories at least. Yud Dalet Achi Nadav ben Ido Machanayma. There's a guy named Achi Nadav who is in charge of Machanayim. Machanayim is across the Jordan across the Jordan River in modern day Jordan. Achimat Benaftali. Now here's a proof. How do I know that the rest of them are not really tribal breakdowns? Because where it is a tribal breakdown, the pasuk specifically says it's a tribal breakdown. So here I got a guy named Achimat Naftali. Gam hula kachet bosmat bat Shlomo liisha. So this guy probably was a Naftali guy to keep him loyal. Again, we marry off the daughter of Shlomo in order to bring him as part of the family. But essentially, you have a prince of Shlomo in charge of one of these territories. Tet Zayin Ba'ana ben Chushai Ba'asher Uva'alot. Chushai, if you remember, remember Chushai Ya'arki? He was the guy who defended David. David was running away, and Chushai was the advisor. And Chushai said, I'm going to go with you. And he said, no, I want you to go back and pretend that you're loyal to Absalom, and you say this, and the other guy named Achitof is going to say the other thing, and maybe he'll listen to you, and you'll be a spy. Now, I don't know that this is the same Chushai. I don't know that it was Natan. But my guess is this is the same Chushai, which was a friend of David. And who's getting the job to take over the territory of Asher? It's Chushai. Chances are that Chushai, if this is the same Chushai, I can guarantee you he wasn't from Asher. He was absolutely from Yehuda. There's no doubt in my mind that he's from Yehuda. I can't prove that it's the same Chushai. Could be that it was a common name. But we don't know of any other Chushais. We do know there was a Chushai who served David very well. And we do know that here we have a son who is serving as his Nitzavim. Let's continue on. Yehoshaphat ben Paruch b'Yisachar. Here I have another guy named Yehoshaphat, who is the son of Paroch, who we've never heard of, who's in charge of Yisachar. My guess is Yehoshaphat is from the tribe of Judah. That's my guess. That's because Yehoshaphat, the only Yehoshaphat that we know for sure what their tribal representatives are Yehuda. Shimi ben Ela ben Binyamin. Now here's something very interesting. Shimi is a common name for Binyamin. We had Shimi ben Bichri, the one who was loyal or not loyal to the king. All the Shimis that we know of was a classic Binyamin name. What's interesting here is Binyamin is apparently given their own tribal leader. And I'll tell you why that's going to make sense later, because when things split up, when the kingdom splits up, there's only one tribe that staves with Shevet Yehudah, which was Shevet Binyamin is the only one. It was a contiguous tribe. But instead of splitting away to the north like they did during the David Rebellion, they split away to the south and stay with Shlomo.
Well,
with Rechavam.
What about Shimon? Weren't there some cities of Shimon scattered?
Shimon was all part of Yehuda. But the name Shimi, I can't prove that this guy Shimi is from Binyamin. I can tell you that every other Shimi we've met in the Tanakh is from Shevet Binyamin. So we're guessing that it's a Binyamin name, and therefore I'm guessing this guy is also from Binyamin. This is, again, it's a big speculation. We don't know any of these.
Well, actually, when it split, part of Shimon was in the south and part of it was
Yeah,
in
Shimon
the north.
Moved up to the north. We'll get to that area as well. Yeah, because then it would look like they should have two extra tribes. One was Shimon that should stay with Judah. We'll find that Shimon takes off to the north. And we'll get to that when we do the division of the state.
Basmat.
Yeah.
Also rings a bell. Where else was
Basmat? Basmat is
the right Paro's daughter.
What's that?
No, I think I remembered as a person.
Basmat.
No, that was Batya, Paro's daughter.
Okay. I should have used this beforehand, but. I might as well use it now. Let's take a look at Basmat. This is your classic concordance, so it'll tell us every place where Basmat is used. Have I saw it? Bet Samach? Is it Bet Samach Mem Tov?
15. Bet Sin Mem Tov.
Bet Sin?
Yeah.
Okay. Now that's tough, because somewhere else it may actually show up as Bet Samach. Sin and Samach usually, they do switch, but this concordance may not be smart enough to cover it. This is not the best concordance. Evan Shoshan is the... Bosmat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hold on a second, almost there. Guess what? Doesn't have it. Very nice.
Alright, so let's go on.
Very nice. They don't make them like they used to.
Oh.
That's
the original version.
What's that? It's very strange that it wouldn't. It's Bet Sin Mem Tov?
Yeah.
Or Mem Tet?
Tough.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sorry.
No.
I wish I had if I had my computer, we could look it up, but I don't know. Let's continue on with the names. I'm amazed everybody is awake to all this. Yotzad is Gever Ben Uri, Be'eretz Gilad. Now, I don't know if his name was really Gever. It's like naming a guy Guy. I don't know if anybody ever saw. You ever see Galaxy Quest? Anybody ever see Galaxy Quest?
No.
So the guy who's there's the guy who always dies when he goes in Star. It was a takeoff of Star Trek. So there's always the guy in the landing mission who's going to die. He never even has a name. And then the Galaxy Quest is making fun of it. There's this really stressed out guy whose name Guy goes, "What's my name, Guy? I don't even have a name. I'm just called Guy." He doesn't die in the movie, but that's the joke. So this guy's name Geber Ben Uri. I assume it was his name. The Eretz Gilad. So here we have another guy. Manasseh is divided up further in Eretz Gilad. Eretz Sichon Melech Ariva, Og Melech Bashan, Unetziv Echad Asher Baaretz. That's talking about, well, I think that's talking about the representative who was in charge of all of them, who was the son of Natan, Azariah ben Natan. To my mind, what's going on here is all these names are either Shevet Yehuda names, or they could be found in Shevet Levi names. There's also Shevet Levi names. Or Kohanic names.
Or Binyamin.
Or in one case, Binyamin. I think, although of course there's no way to prove it, not only is it clear that he's dividing the state up in non-tribal ways, not always, by the way, Zebulun gets his property, Binyamin gets his property, there are a few that Asher gets his property, there are a few that get to keep their own that apparently it worked out. By the way, you should know, Zebulun and Asher were the two northernmost areas. Asher is all the way up by Lebanon, and Zvulun is also up in the Yam Kineret area into the north. Yisachar is right below that. Maybe he felt that far up. I can't really control that territory, so I'm not going to divide it up. Or very often, you never really see those tribes causing too much trouble up to that point. So I'll leave them the way they are. But Manasseh and Ephraim, those troublemakers, those guys had Shoftim galore. Those, Manasseh gets divided into at least three pieces. Ephraim gets Har Ephraim, but it looks like part of Ephraim is cut off of that Shalvim area. So what you see is he's gerrymandering the country. Now you could say if it was for purely kalkali reasons, purely economic, because if each one is given a month to give food, so you have to make sure that everybody has the right thing. If there's one more rocky place, they need more territory. That would be true if each one was represented by more or less the correct local ruler. But I'm guessing here that not only was each one not represented by his correct local ruler, each one was represented by somebody from David's family, somebody from Yehuda, somebody who was a friend of David, like Hushai, somebody that was from a Levi family, like Natan and his kids. I think that Natan was the prophet. I think he was probably also a Kohen, and I think that his kid was put in charge of all the other representatives. And essentially what you have here, and the ones who weren't part of Shlomo's family became part of Shlomo's family by marrying them off. That is, why would the pasuk simply mention here that he married them off? I guess it's interesting, but we really don't hear about it. That is, why is it important for this pasuk, these two pasukim, to tell me that they married the king's daughters? I want you to know that a prince was in charge of this territory, meaning, I don't want to say nepotism because it has a very negative sense, but the truth is every politician, right? Any politician gets a job, and who does he appoint his representatives in foreign ambassadors? Usually people who stuck with him, right?
Supposedly you could trust the family more than you could
trust
the
I think that's what's going on here. Now, I'm not saying this is... that's right. Well, part of them, right? His sons were okay. Others, his son-in-laws were the problem. That's right. The son-in-laws, they're always trouble.
So yeah. Well, these guys are sons-in-laws.
That's true. In any event, what I believe you have here is very clever political maneuvering. Now, what's interesting here, to my mind... Actually, I'm not going to say what's interesting to my mind. I'd like to read on for a little bit, and then I'd like to compare these appointees back to David's appointees. But anyway, let's continue on. Pasuk Chaf, last verse. Yudav Yisrael Rabim Kol Ayam Asher Kol Asher Ayam Larov Ochlim B'Shotim U'Smechim. Everybody, they were as great as the sand on the ocean. What?
That's
not happening. Well, Ochlim B'Shotim U'Smechim. They were eating and drinking, and they were all happy. Whether that's a negative thing or a positive thing is hard to say. At prima facie, it looks there's nothing really inherently negative about that comment. It means things were very, very good. And the fact that they were Kohola Sheros Ala Yamba Rov seems to indicate that the promise to Abraham and the promise probably in the pre Tokacha area, that is before, you know, Tokacha, where they say that the Jews will be many, apparently came to life. The people got what they expected to get. Pasukei. Parakei. And by the way,
question.
Yeah.
These different regions, is that something new that was kind of invented here?
Oh, yeah. Nobody had the chutzpah. The question is, you have to have tremendous chutzpah to go into a tribal, even if the tribes are going to follow you, nobody had the guts at this point, to go in and gerrymander.
Mm-hmm.
Even today, you gerrymander the United States, you better have a lot of political clout to be able to gerrymander what you want to, and people do, for sure. But to go and gerrymander and to undo the tribal divisions, and it won't last, by the way. It won't last. But his idea is, if this is a monarchy, it's a monarchy. We're not playing games with Shvatim anymore. Not only am I going to gerrymander them to more or less take away the powerful tribal units. Now, Binyamin left who he was, maybe because he didn't want to mess with Binyamin. It was a powerful tribe, plus it was contiguously close, plus it owned Harabayit, where the temple was. But Manasseh and Ephraim seemed to be cut up galore, and they were the powerhouses up to this point. And what's interesting, by the way, is Yeravam will come from none other than Ephraim. Yeravam will come from Ephraim. But the kings that take place afterwards, the famous Achav and Omri, are from Yisachar, are not from Ephraim. Ephraim will really not come back to life afterwards. Ephraim will be powerful for a little bit, but the power will move quickly away from Ephraim into the northern tribes, and they're the ones who could take over. Maybe because, perhaps, all this is speculation, and I want to be, own up to that, perhaps because the northern tribes were left alone to marry into their families and to perform power bases, and Ephraim and Manasseh were cut up into pieces and under the thumb of Shevet Yehuda, and perhaps that did that long-term damage, and therefore they weren't able to put together monarchies after this, because they really weren't. They never really came back to power, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think he ever had anybody from Shevet Ephraim that came back. It was Yisachar, it was Reuben and Gad. I think maybe Menashe, but I'm not sure.
This was
after the division. Yeah, you never really Ephraim. You had one king from Ephraim. He had a very that was Yeravam. He had a short-lived dynasty. His first son dies. His second son rules for 2 years, if I'm not mistaken. He himself ruled for 22 years, I believe, and that's it for Shevet Ephraim. No more. You don't hear from him anymore. And Shevet Ephraim was the tribe. You know, the tribe. You had Shevet Ephraim and Menashe gave us Gidon, gave you Devorah, gave you Yiftach. All of the powerhouse kings came from them or from Shevet Binyamin. Binyamin gave you Ehud Ben Gera, and Binyamin gave you that's it, I think. You have a whole Pelegia story, but I mean, as far as the rulers, yeah, Michayahu actually.
I think that decimated Binyamin.
What's that? Yeah, they come back to life though. You under Shimon and Gera, but that's a Shmuel Aleph that issue. Anyway, let's continue on. Shlomo Hayam Moshe b'chol ha'mamachot min ha'nahar eretz plishtim v'yad gvul Mitzrayim. Now this is a difficult pasuk. Shlomo ruled all over the lands that were from the river of Eretz Plishtim until Gvul Mitzrayim. That's not a lot. That sounds like the Sinai Desert. So therefore, the Targum and everybody else corrects this and essentially says min ha'nahar, i.e. the Euphrates, until Eretz Plishtim, all the way to Mitzrayim. That's how they gerrymandered the pasuk, which makes sense, of course, because you're not really impressing anybody by saying that you're ruling from Eretz Plishtim to Eretz Mitzrayim. That's a little tiny desert area. That's not impressive. So it probably was the original read of the pasuk. Does that mean the word Ad got switched around? Hard to say. But again, the Targum is more than happy to rearrange it. The Targum says on this pasuk, I'll just read you the Targum, and the Targum is the most ancient papyrus that we have in front of us here. Ushlomo havi shali b'chol machutim in nahar prat ad ara plishti v'ad chum Mitzrayim. That's essentially
explicit.
Where they... What?
Pretty explicit.
Yeah. He wants to make this pasuk explicit.
Well, the nahar prat actually is in the north of Lebanon.
That's correct. Yeah, although going up towards Syria.
I don't think
Syria.
They're talking about Tigris and Euphrates.
No, not Tigris and Euphrates. That's an important idea. There's no way Shlomo owned Mesopotamia. It is not trying to say that he owned Mesopotamia. He owned the Aramite lands below Mesopotamia coming into Lebanon and Syria. That's a very important idea. Nobody ever says that he ruled Syria, and if it said that, we would have had a lot of problems with historical accuracy, and no such problem here. And by the way, these are vassal states. It doesn't mean that they're part of Israel. These are independent states, however, they have to pay vassalage to it, otherwise he will come and make their lives miserable. And that's an important idea that we're going to get back to a little bit later today, although I see I'm running way behind, so let's see one. V'ayhi lechem shlomo v'yom echad, shloshim kor sod v'shishim kor kemach, asara bakar b'riyim v'yasvim bakar re'i umei atzon, levad v'ayol tzvi yachmor ba b'riyim avasim. Now it's talking about the food. One day of food was 30 kor of solet, shishim kor of kemach. Now, I always have fun doing the math here. The math here is tremendous. The question is, how much is a kor? So, do you have a translation on the kor there? I have one in my dot mikra, but I couldn't find one. How did they, what?
K-O-R.
That's how they translate? There's no comment there on how much a kor is?
He says there's 30 measures.
30 measures of fine flour.
Three
score measures of meal.
Okay. So now let's assume. I just want to assume
it
for a second.
Actually, says here, okay. Core equal to about 11 bushels.
Okay,
oh,
11.
My goodness.
Yeah. Okay. I think we're talking. You're talking about a decent amount of size. So let's do the math here. Solet is fine flour. Solet is even modern Hebrew what we call semolina wheat. It's a very fine ground flour. So you got 30 of that. Let's say a core is. Let's say I go to a store and buy one of those wheat things. How much do those cost? About a buck.
What
things are wheat?
Flour, you mean?
Flour. Buy a flour. Is that about a buck?
No, it's more than
no. Not wheat. Flour. How much?
5 pounds or $1.25.
5 pounds. So one of those 5 pounds things. I'm thinking it's about 10 times that size is a core.
Yeah.
So now we got let's say it's a dollar. Let's go cheap. Let's say he bought it wholesale. Let's say it's a buck. So now I got let's say a core is 10 times the size. That's now I got 10 of that's $10. Let's multiply that by 30 for fine flour. Fine flour, I'd say, is probably $2 a shot, right? So let's go from 30 to 60, and then multiply that by 365. Any mathematicians here? You got a calculator?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go with 60 times 365.
I think the numbers are going to get too high.
21,900.
What's that?
$23,000.
$23,000. Now, we also got the other wheat bread, which comes out to about the same amount, because let's say it's half as cheap. So now we got... We got 46,000. No, I remember the numbers coming out much more. I think the bushels wind up coming much larger. I think I'm underestimating. I'm not going to do the calculation here. I'm sorry. I'm coming a little bit unprepped for this class. No, how much was on the shulchan, which means everybody used to have people come in and eat every day. He used to have armies come in, and he used to feed his armies, and he used to feed his... What's that? Exactly right. I believe the economy, calculating all the meat as well, because if you notice, he also had 10 fat cows and 10 skinny cows, which, by the way, is a little bit reminiscent of Paro, and 100 sown every day, excluding various other nice delicacies. I seem to remember doing the math. I seem to remember the economy being about a $10 million economy. $10 million economy, like the GDP being about $10 million just for food. What he was running was an economic powerhouse. I think that's what's being described. And I think if we do the math with the right size of the core, and I apologize, I have a core listed as, I don't know exactly how much a bushel is. I think it's larger than times 10. I think you're talking about a massive economy that he has. But let's continue on. Kihu rodeh b'chol eiver ha'nahar. He was in charge of all of across the river. Mitifsach v'ad aza b'chol malchei eiver ha'nahar v'shalom hayalo mikol avarav misaviv. He had peace everywhere. V'yeshev Yudai Yisrael levetach ish tachat gafno v'tachat tenato midan v'ad be'er shava kol yimei shlomo. I'm going to get back to this pasuk because this is the messianic pasuk I was referring to and skip on to the next pasukim. V'yehi shlomo arabim elef arevot tzufim. He had 40,000, and according to Dibriyam, it's 4,000. I'm not going to try to resolve that right now. Groups of horses. That's, you know, horse, what do you call them when horses are chained together?
Teams,
I think, maybe a little better. Lemer Kavo, maybe stalls. Ushnemasar Elef Parashim. He had 12,000 cavalrymen. The Chilkalu Anitzavim Ha'elu at the Melech Shlomo, Ve'ekol HaKarev HaShulchan HaMelech Shlomo, Ish Chodsho V'lo Yadru Davar. When they say that they were paying for his table, it's clear here what they're referring to when they're talking about the charioteers. He's talking about his army. It's by his army. Now, the question is, why is this? So what did Chazal say here? Chazal say he's being over the mitzvah, he's not allowed to have too many horses. Comes the Radak and says as follows, very interesting thing. It's not that he had too many horses, he had too many unnecessary horses. How do we know that? He had 40,000 teams of horses, but he only had 12,000 charioteers, which means you don't need 40,000 horses, which means the rest were just for show. How come you didn't even need the 12,000 charioteers? Because you needed such a big army, because there was peace everywhere. In my opinion, that's a misunderstanding of the Radak of how one gets peace in the ancient Near East. The way to get peace, when it says, Ayal lo shalom misaviv, is by power. That means he had horses and all those, he had representatives, and they weren't serving tea there. They were there, and we're going to meet later on. He has entire cities geared for his military. The way that you guarantee peace is to have a show of force. What's that?
Like
Megiddo and other cities will be what's called Arei Meskenot, which will again remind us of Paro, which is cities are geared for officers. They paid off the officers. By the way, something interesting here. There's a pasuk which a lot of people have problems with in Tehillim. We sing it for Suda Shlishi. It's Gam Kelech B'Gei Tzavah Lo Yira Ram Ki Ata Yomadi Gam Kelech B'Gei Tzavah Lo Yira Ki Ata Yomadi Shitcha Meshanta Hema Yinachamuni Taroch Lefanai Shulchan Neged Sorarai. So what kind of, I don't know, what does that mean? You let me eat my table while my enemies look on and go, wow, I wish I could eat at your table. And he says, no, you can't. So the word shulchan, and you can prove it in Tanakh, means a military table. Military table. It indicates the staff. Staff would eat at this table. They would lay it at a table. The staff would come, and that's where they would do their staff work. And I'll show that one time if I'm doing Tehillim once, and it changes the whole meaning of Tehillim. He's not begging that he has a nice meal while his friends grovel at the door. He's begging that his table of military will be well represented against his enemies. In any event, here, what's going on here is that the armies, I think the Radak is not right here. These armies are geared, the peace is won because the armies are in the various countries. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's just a reality. If you have that much countries that you are getting tribute from, that means that you have enough armies to field in these various countries, and therefore you need an economy, a $20 million or $1 million economy, to be able to pay for this kind of military service. Again, here the question is, why does it mention, everybody has a difficulty with verse 7. What's the problem with verse 7? The chilchalu anitzavim elu, these nitzavim paid off Melech Shlomo by kol hakarev al shulchan Melech Shlomo asher chodsho ish chodsho, everybody for a month, lo yadru davar, they wouldn't let anything, everybody would pay up on time. We already know about the Nitzavim. That is the Nitzavim we start talking about. That was Perek Dal, Perek Hay. We met the Nitzavim. They paid the food. End of story. We know that they pay one every month. What's the big deal? So I think what's going on here is after that, then you meet the army. Got 40,000 teams of chariots. Got 12,000 cavalrymen. And then once again, the pasuk comes again and says, "And these Nitzavim, they were feeding them." So according to them, some of them farshim. The farshim that means they weren't only paying for the food service of the king, his dinner, but they were also paying for his horses. But I don't think that's what's going on here. I think what's going on here is the shulchan that they're talking about was not on the military. And we'll see that when the queen of Sheba comes, she'll see, wow, look at all your people laid out, everybody, each one in their own dress. And Chazal say that was each one had a rank. Colonels were at the head, generals at the head, then colonels, then lieutenants. You're talking about a military affair here. You're talking about the only kind of politics that was possible back then. If you were the type of country that could rule over other countries, you had a military country. It was that simple. Whether you were Assyria, or whether you were Egypt, or whether you were Israel, you had a force, you had a military force. And that military force would be the not the hoi polloi, they would be the dukes, the leaders of the landed men, so to speak. And they would be served well by the rest of the economy. That's the way economies worked back then. Whether Tanakh is criticizing here, I'm not ready to say that it's criticizing. I think it's just telling us the way it was. The country was re-gerrymandered to avoid the tribal system and institute a economic system. The economic system then pays for the military. The military, you see what's going on? First we introduce the economy. Then we introduce the military, all of these charioteers, and then we go back to the economists who pay off the military, because it's a cycle. First, I develop a great economy. Once I develop a great economy, I can support a big military. But then once I have a big military, well, it's like look at the United States. The fact that we still have income tax is great. When was income tax? Income tax is against the Constitution. You had to write an amendment to the Constitution to bring to an income tax. When is the income tax instituted? 1417. World War One. Right, World War One. It was needed to pay off the troops and the army of World War One. It was supposed to be temporary. It was supposed to be gotten rid of. But when you start getting money, you know, you find that it's hard to get rid of the money that you're spending. So here, too, you have a nice military. Money goes in the military. Try to tell, they had a news item about some town that had, like, this big helicopter shop, and they were shutting it down. I think it was in Connecticut or something. It was in, where was the guy who's religious, who's the governor of the state?
Connecticut.
It was Connecticut. So they wanted to close down what?
Lieberman.
Senator. Sorry, not right. The governor was actually arrested, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Right. So, and now it's right enough. Oh, yeah. And she was the one who was very upset because they were closing down. What? So they were closing down the helicopter shops, and now she's very upset about it. Why? Because it feeds. It's like a pendulum. It swings back and forth. The economy feeds the army. The army grows, needs more economy. Grow. And what they're saying is, lo yedru davar, even though you have this massive economy, which is now not only a massive economy, but it's a military economy, which is able to suppress every country up to the Mesopotamia. Therefore, and still they were able to produce as much food that's necessary. And that's really the picture that's being painted here. Economy, military, then economy that's able to feed the military. Vasorim temel susim l'rechesh yaviu el makom asher yesham. They would bring here. You got this beautiful distribution centers. This is beautiful. How did he get all these people fed? Because keep in mind, where are the susim? This is something that you miss unless you know something about politics back then. Where were the susim? They weren't all hanging around Yerushalayim, although I'm sure some of them were. If you have countries all over the place feeding, sending in their tribute, I guarantee you that you have military outposts in all of these areas. How do you get food to these areas? You set up a distribution system, which is also a brand new idea that nobody's ever seen, because it's always been tribal. It was very non-federalist. It was always state-run. The state would serve itself. Yehuda would serve Yehuda. Zvulun would serve Zvulun, because they never really went too far out of the military spectrum. But now that it's a federalist government, and now that you have military everywhere, and that's why you have peace all over, now you have to have a distribution system. It's beautiful. Vasorim batemel asusim. What about all the food that had to pay for these horses? Vela rechesh, and to all the people who were riding the horses, or rechesh actually maybe donkeys. Yaviu el makom asher yesham. Wherever they were, they bring food to those distribution centers. They had no truck drivers,
teamsters. From the areas that they're...
Because what? secure, I think.
Locally.
What's that?
Yeah, went and get it from the
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. It's a good question. Maybe they did. I don't know. It sounds like it's being distributed out of a central store. Could be in order to collect taxes on it. I don't know. It's hard to say. Could be that they were. I don't know. It's a good question.
Maybe the local population wasn't
couldn't support it. Maybe couldn't support it. Maybe you always want. I read there's a guy named P.J. O'Rourke who's a very funny right wing political columnist. And he was talking about Somalia. He wrote this during the famous Somalia invasion. Of he said that ABC was on staff there. They had news groups. He flew into the news groups. It was an armed camp. They had enough food to last them for. They actually hired people from different countries to protect it, and he had, you know, they had tuna fish and you name it. They had canned food out the wazoo. Because the bottom line is you're still in an enemy state, so I guess you want to make sure that you have your own supplies, make sure your food's not poisoned, make sure that you're getting what you need. Sounds like he set up a self-reliant distribution center.
Now, it also allows you to provide jobs for your friends to work there.
That's true. Yeah, it's true. And then improve the economy.
Now, but this distribution center was to feed the military. It wasn't to feed the rest of the country.
In this case, it looks like it's just a military distribution center, yeah. Although it could have been all over. It could have been they had horses in all the Shabbatim areas as well. Wherever the horses were, that's where they distributed the food to. It was this brilliant distribution system, but it appears to be military-based because it's the horses, which we just met as part of the military, that are being fed. I want to notice that last word, though, and we'll end soon. It looks like I may not get to the Mashiach idea, but I'll try.
We'll have to
wait for it. Vasoarim Vateven, the barley and the hay, Vasusim Valarachash, to the horses and to the donkeys or to the fast horses, not clear. Yaviu Elamakom Asher Yesham Ish Kimishpato, each person according to his. Now, how does English translate Mishpato?
According
to his charge. That's funny. Normally the word Mishpat means what?
Law,
rule, judge, legal system. Here, mishpat means, and you will find the word mishpat used, mishpat means based on its rules. Not rules as in a legal ruling system, but based on what is required. Mishpat means based on a set of rules that I've set up, each person does the set of rules that he's set up. Mishpat, he does what he's supposed to do. What I find interesting here is that when it says that David ruled over his country, it says, Hu malacha kol Yisrael, which it says exactly by Shlomo. But it also says David asat tzedek u'mishpat l'chol bamo. Here the word mishpat is emphasized, and Chazal mentioned. Now I'm going to have to get to. That. I'll leave it alone for right now. I'm going to talk about the Mashiach thing a little bit. You know what? There's no way for me to cover the Mashiach. Could I apologize and cover the Mashiach? Mashiach next time. We'll do Mashiach, God willing, next time. I actually have a whole page that's going to take us into Melicha and Schar. It's very interesting. It essentially talks about the two very different views of Mashiach, the Rambam's view and the more Kabbalistic view. And we'll find that both of these, what are called the rational view and the mystical view of Mashiach, and there are those two views that are always coming into conflict, are something which will come up here, and something that is actually reflected even in Tanakh time. Because even in Tanakh time, you had two different types of prophets. Those that saw things in a mystical, Mashiach in a mystical way, those who saw things, Mashiach, in a rational way, and we'll try to figure out, the prophet who's writing this text, which way he sees Mashiach, if in fact he sees Mashiach here. I believe that he sees Mashiach here, and I believe that Shlomo was in fact the Mashiach, not just a Mashiach, and I will try to prove that next time. So you could ask a question, then how come we're not all living in Messianic lands? So I'll show you there's more to Mashiach than meets the eye, and we'll cover Mashiach next time. Okay. Anyways.